Side 7, The Robots of Dawn. Continuing on page 247. Bailey put out his arm in the direction of the woman, as though to stop her, even though she was still 30 meters away, and muttered, "Doesn't she know that's a men's personal?" "What?" said Grimianus. The woman continued to approach while Bailey watched in total puzzlement. Finally, the woman's robot stepped to one side to wait, and the woman entered the structure. Bailey said helplessly, "But she can't go in there." Grimianus said, "Why not? It's communal." "But it's for men."
"It's for people," said Grimianus. He seemed utterly confused.
"Either sex? Surely you can't mean that."
"Any human being. Of course I mean it. How would you want it to be? I don't understand."
Bailey turned away. It had not been many minutes before that he had thought that open conversation in a personal was the acme in bad taste of things not done. If he had tried to think of something worse yet, he would have completely failed to dredge up the possibility of encountering a woman in a personal. Convention on Earth required him to ignore the presence of others in the large community personals on that world, but not all the conventions ever invented would have prevented him from knowing whether a person passing him was a man or a woman. What if, while he had been in the personal, a woman had entered, casually, indifferently, as this one had just done? Or worse still, what if he had entered a personal and found a woman already there? He could not estimate his reaction. He had never weighed the possibility, let alone met with such a situation. But he found the thought totally intolerable, and the book films had told him nothing about that, either. He had viewed those films in order that he might not approach the investigation in total ignorance of the Auroran way of life, and they had left him in total ignorance of all that was important. Then how could he handle this triply knotted puzzle of Jander's death, when at every step he found himself lost in ignorance? A moment before he had felt triumph at a small conquest over the terrors of outside, but now he was faced with the feeling of being ignorant of everything, ignorant even of the nature of his ignorance. It was now, while fighting not to picture the woman passing through the airspace lately occupied by himself, that he came near to utter despair. 48. Again Giscard said, and in a way that made it possible to read concern into his words, if not into the tone, "Are you unwell, sir? Do you need help?" Bailey muttered, No, I'm all right. But let's move away. We're in the path of people wishing to use that structure." He walked rapidly toward the airfoil that was resting in the open stretch beyond the gravel path. On the other side was a small two-wheeled vehicle with two seats, one behind the other. Bailey assumed it to be Grimianus's scooter. His feeling of depression and misery, Bailey realized, was accentuated by the fact that he felt hungry. It was clearly past lunchtime, and he had not eaten. He turned to Grimianus. "Let's talk, but if you don't mind, let's do it over lunch. That is, if you haven't already eaten, and if you don't mind eating with me."
"Where are you going to eat?"
"I don't know. Where does one eat at the Institute?" Grimianus said,
"Not at the community diner. We can't talk there."
"Is there an alternative?"
"Come to my establishment," said Grimianus at once. "It isn't one of the fancier ones here. I'm not one of your high executives. Still, I have a few serviceable robots, and we can set a decent table. I tell you what. I'll get on my scooter with Brundage, my robot, you know, and you follow me. You'll have to go slowly, but I'm only a little over a kilometer away. It will just take 2 or 3 minutes."
He moved away at an eager half-run. Bailey watched him and thought there seemed to be a kind of gangly youthfulness about him. There was no easy way of actually judging his age, of course. Spacers didn't show age, and Grimianus might easily be 50, but he acted young. Almost what an Earthman would consider teenage young. Bailey wasn't sure exactly what there was about him that gave that impression. Bailey turned suddenly to Daniil. "Do you know Grimianus, Daniil?"
"I have never met him before, partner Elijah."
"You, Giscard?"
"I have met him once, sir, but only in passing."
"Do you know anything about him, Giscard?"
"Nothing that is not apparent on the surface, sir."
"His age, his personality?"
"No, sir."
Grimianus shouted, "Ready!" His scooter was humming rather roughly. It was clear that it was not airjet-assisted. The wheels would not leave the ground. Brundage sat behind Grimianus. Giscard, Daniil, and Bailey moved quickly into their airfoil once again. Grimianus moved outward in a loose circle. Grimianus's hair flew backward in the wind, and Bailey had a sudden sensation of how the wind must feel when one traveled in an open vehicle such as a scooter. He was thankful he was totally enclosed in an airfoil, which suddenly seemed to him a much more civilized way of traveling. The scooter straightened out and darted off with a muted roar, Grimianus waving one hand in a follow-me gesture.
The robot behind him maintained his balance with almost negligent ease and did not hold on to Grimianus' waist, as Bailey was certain a human being would have needed to. The airfoil followed. Although the scooter's smooth forward progression seemed high speed, that was apparently the illusion of its small size. The airfoil had some difficulty maintaining a speed low enough to avoid running it down.
"Just the same," said Bailey thoughtfully, "one thing puzzles me."
"What is that, Partner Elijah?" asked Daniil.
Vasilia referred to this Grimianus disparagingly as a barber. Apparently he deals with hair, clothes, and other matters of personal human adornment. How is it, then, that he has an establishment on the grounds of the Robotics Institute?
Chapter 12. Again, Grimianus. 49. It took only a few minutes before Bailey found himself in the fourth Auroran establishment he had seen since his arrival on the planet a day and a half before. Fastoffs, Gladius, Vasilia's, and now Grimianus's. Grimianus's establishment appeared smaller and drabber than the others, even though it showed, to Bailey's unpracticed eye in Auroran matters, signs of recent construction. The distinctive mark of the Auroran establishment, the robotic niches, were, however, present. On entering, Giscard and Daniil moved quickly into two that were empty and faced the room, unmoving and silent. Grimianus's robot, Brundage, moved into a third niche almost as quickly. There was no sign of any difficulty in making their choices or of any tendency for any one niche to be the target of two robots, however briefly. Bailey wondered how the robots avoided conflict and decided there must be signal communication among them of a kind that was subliminal to human beings. It was something, provided he remembered to do so, concerning which he might consult Daniil. Grimianus was studying the niches also, Bailey noticed. Grimianus's hand had gone to his upper lip, and for a moment his forefinger stroked the small mustache. He said a bit uncertainly,
"Your robot, the human-looking one, doesn't seem right in the niche. That's Daniil Olivaw, isn't it? Dr. Fastoff's robot?"
"Yes," said Bailey. He was in the hyperwave drama, too, or at least an actor was, one who better fit the part.
"Yes, I remember."
Bailey noted that Grimianus, like Vasilia, and even like Gladia and Fastoff, kept a certain distance. There seemed to be a repulsion field, unseen, unfelt, unsensed in any way, around Bailey, that kept these spacers from approaching too closely, that sent them into a gentle curve of avoidance when they passed him. Bailey wondered if Grimianus was aware of this, or if it was entirely automatic. And what did they do with the chairs he sat in while in their establishments, the dishes he ate from, the towels he used? Would ordinary washing suffice? Were there special sterilizing procedures? Would they discard and replace everything? Would the establishments be fumigated once he left the planet, or every night? What about the community personnel he used? Would they tear it down and rebuild it? What about the woman who had ignorantly entered it after he had left? Or could she possibly have been the fumigator? He realized he was getting silly. To outer space with it. What the Aurorans did and how they dealt with their problems was their affair, and he would bother his head no more with them. Jehoshaphat. He had his own problems, and right now the particular splinter of it was Grimianus, and he would tackle that after lunch. Lunch was rather simple, largely vegetarian, but for the first time he had a little trouble. Each separate item was too sharply defined in taste. The carrots tasted rather strongly of carrots, and the peas of peas, so to speak. A little too much so, perhaps. He ate rather reluctantly and tried not to show a slightly rising gorge. And as he did so, he became aware that he grew used to it, as though his taste buds saturated and could handle the excess more easily. It dawned on Bailey in a rather sad way that if his exposure to Auroran food was to continue for any length of time, he would return to Earth missing that distinctiveness of flavor and resenting the flowing together of Earth tastes. Even the crispness of various items, which had startled him at first, as each closing of his teeth seemed to create a noise that surely, he thought, must interfere with conversation, had already grown to seem exciting evidence that he was, in fact, eating. There would be a silence about an Earth meal that would leave him missing something. He began to eat with attention, to study the tastes. Perhaps when Earth people established themselves on other worlds, this spacer fashion food would be the mark of the new diet, especially if there were no robots to prepare and serve the meals. And then he thought uncomfortably, not when, but if Earth people established themselves on other worlds, and the ifness of it all depended on him, on plainclothesman Elijah Bailey. The burden of it weighed him down. The meal was over. A pair of robots brought in the heated, moistened napkins with which one could clean one's hands. Except that they weren't ordinary napkins. for when Bailey put his down on the plate, it seemed to move slightly, thin out, and grow cobwebby. Then, quite suddenly, it leaped up insubstantially and was carried into an outlet in the ceiling. Bailey jumped slightly, and his eyes moved upward, following the disappearing item, open-mouthed. Gramianus said, "That's something new I just picked up. Disposable, you see, but I don't know if I like it yet. Some people say it will clog the disposal vent after a while, and others worry about pollution because they say some of it will surely get into your lungs. The manufacturer says not, but..." Bailey realized suddenly that he had said not a word during the meal, and that this was the first time either of them had spoken since the short exchange on Daniil before the meal had been served. And there was no use in small talk about napkins. Bailey said rather gruffly, "Are you a barber, Mr. Gramianus?" Gramianus flushed, his light skin reddening to the hairline. He said in a choked voice, "Who told you that?" Bailey said, "If that is an impolite way of referring to your profession, I apologize. It is a common way of speaking on Earth, and is no insult there." Gramianus said, "I'm a hair designer and a clothing designer. It is a recognized branch of art. I am, in fact, a personnel artist." His finger went to his mustache again. Bailey said gravely, "I notice your mustache. Is it common to grow them on Aurora?"
"No, it is not. I hope it will become so. You take your masculine face. A great many of them can be strengthened and improved by the artful design of facial hair. Everything is in the design. That's part of my profession. You can go too far, of course. On the world of Pallas, facial hair is common, but it is the practice there to indulge in particolored dyeing. Each individual hair is separately dyed to produce some sort of mixture. Now, that's foolish. It doesn't last, the colors change with time, and it looks terrible. But even so, it's better than facial baldness in some ways. Nothing is less attractive than a facial desert. That's my own phrase. I use it in my personal talks with potential clients, and it's very effective. Females can get by with no facial hair because they make up for it in other ways. On the world of Smithius..." There was a hypnotic quality to his quiet, rapid words and his earnest expression, the way in which his eyes widened and remained fixed on Bailey with an intense sincerity. Bailey had to shake loose with an almost physical force. He said, "Are you a roboticist, Mr. Gramianus?" Gramianus looked startled and a little confused at being interrupted in mid-flow.
"A roboticist?"
"Yes, a roboticist."
"No, not at all. I use robots, as everyone does, but I don't know what's inside them. Don't care, really."
"But you live here on the grounds of the Robotics Institute. How is that?"
"Why shouldn't I?"
Gramianus' voice was measurably more hostile. "If you're not a roboticist..."
Gramianus grimaced. "That's stupid. The Institute, when it was designed some years ago, was intended to be a self-contained community. We have our own transport vehicle repair shops, our own personal robot maintenance shops, our own physicians, our own structuralists. Our personnel live here. And if they have use for a personnel artist, that's Santerix Gramianus, and I live here too. Is there something wrong with my profession that I should not?"
"I haven't said that." Gramianus turned away with a residual petulance that Bailey's hasty disclaimer had not allayed. He pressed a button, then, after studying a varicolored rectangular strip, did something that was remarkably like drumming his fingers briefly. A sphere dropped gently from the ceiling and remained suspended a meter or so above their heads. It opened as though it were an orange that was unsegmenting, and a play of colors began within it, together with a soft wash of sound. The two melted together so skillfully that Bailey, watching with astonishment, discovered that after a short while it was hard to distinguish one from the other. The windows opacified and the segments grew brighter.
"Too bright?" asked Gramianus.
"No," said Bailey after some hesitation.
"It's meant for background, and I've picked a soothing combination that will make it easier for us to talk in a civilized way, you know."
Then he said briskly,
"Shall we get to the point?"
Bailey withdrew his attention from the... whatever it was. Gramianus had not given it a name. With some difficulty, and said, "If you please, I would like to."
"Have you been accusing me of having anything to do with the immobilization of that robot Jander?"
"I've been inquiring into the circumstances of the robot's ending."
"But you've mentioned me in connection with that ending. In fact, just a little while ago, you asked me if I were a roboticist. I know what you had in mind. You were trying to get me to admit I knew something about robotics, so that you could build up a case against me as the ender of the robot."
"You might say the killer."
"The killer? You can't kill a robot. In any case, I didn't end it or kill it or anything you want to call it. I told you I'm not a roboticist. I know nothing about robotics. How can you even think that..."
"I must investigate all connections, Mr. Gramianus. Jander belonged to Gladia, the Solarian woman, And you were friendly with her. That's a connection.
There could be any number of people friendly with her. That's no connection.
Are you willing to state that you never saw Jander in all the times you may have been in Gladia's establishment?
Never, not once.
You never knew she had a humaniform robot?
No.
She never mentioned him.
She had robots all over the place, all ordinary robots. She said nothing about having anything else.
Bailey shrugged. Very well. I have no reason, so far, to suppose that that is not the truth.
Then say so to Gladia. That is why I wanted to see you. To ask you to do that, to insist.
Has Gladia any reason to think otherwise?
Of course. You poisoned her mind. You questioned her about me in that connection, and she assumed she was made uncertain. The fact is, she called this morning and asked me if I had anything to do with it. I told you that.
And you denied it?
Of course I denied it, and very strenuously, too, because I didn't have anything to do with it. But it's not convincing if I do the denying. I want you to do it. I want you to tell her that, in your opinion, I had nothing to do with the whole business. You just said I didn't, and you can't, without any evidence at all, destroy my reputation. I can report you.
To whom?
To the Committee on Personal Defense, to the legislature. The head of this institute is a close personal friend of the chairman himself, and I've already sent a full report to him on this matter. I'm not waiting, you understand. I'm taking action.
Gromyanus shook his head with an attitude that might have been intended for fierceness, but that did not entirely carry conviction, considering the mildness of his face.
Look, he said, this isn't Earth. We are protected here. Your planet, with its overpopulation, makes your people exist in so many beehives, so many anthills. You push against each other, suffocate each other. And it doesn't matter. One life or a million lives. It doesn't matter.
Bailey, fighting to keep contempt from showing in his voice, said, you've been reading historical novels.
Of course I have, and they describe it as it is. You can't have billions of people on a single world without its being so. On Aurora, we are each a valuable life. We are protected physically, each of us, by our robots, so that there is never an assault, let alone murder, on Aurora.
Except for Jander.
That's not murder, it's only a robot. And we are protected from the kinds of harm more subtle than assault by our legislature. The Committee on Personal Defense takes a dim view, a very dim view, of any action that unfairly damages the reputation or the social status of any individual citizen. And Aurora, in acting as you did, would be in trouble enough. As for an Earthman, well...
Bailey said, I am carrying on an investigation at the invitation, I presume, of the legislature. I don't suppose Dr. Fastolf could have brought me here without legislative permission.
Maybe so, but that wouldn't give you the right to overstep the limits of fair investigation.
Are you going to put this up to the legislature, then?
I'm going to have the Institute head...
What is his name, by the way?
Keldon Amadiro. I'm going to ask him to put it up to the legislature, and he's in the legislature, you know. He's one of the leaders of the globalist party, so I think you had better make it plain to Gladia that I am completely innocent.
I would like to, Mr. Gromyanus, because I suspect that you are innocent. But how can I change suspicion to certainty unless you will allow me to ask you some questions?
Gromyanus hesitated. Then, with an air of defiance, he leaned back in his chair and placed his hands behind his neck, the picture of a man utterly failing to appear at ease.
He said, ask away. I have nothing to hide. And after you're done, you'll have to call Gladia right on that trimensional transmitter behind you and say your piece, or you will be in more trouble than you can imagine.
I understand. But first, how long have you known Dr. Vasilia Fastolf, Mr. Gromyanus, or Dr. Vasilia Aliena, if you know her by that name?
Gromyanus hesitated, then said in a tense voice, why do you ask that? What does that have to do with it?
Bailey sighed, and his dour face seemed to sadden further. I remind you, Mr. Gromyanus, that you have nothing to hide, and that you want to convince me of your innocence, so that I can convince Gladia of the same. Just tell me how long you have known her. If you have not known her, just say so. But before you do, it is only fair to tell you that Dr. Vasilia has stated that you knew her well. Well enough, at least, to offer yourself to her.
Gromyanus looked chagrined. He said in a shaky voice, I don't know why people have to make a big thing out of it. An offer is a perfectly natural social interaction that concerns no one else. Of course, you're an Earthman, so you'd make a fuss about it.
I understand she didn't accept your offer.
Gromyanus brought his hands down upon his lap, fists clenched. Accepting or rejecting is entirely up to her. There have been people who've offered themselves to me and whom I've rejected. It's no large matter.
Well, then, how long have you known her?
For some years, about 15.
Did you know her when she was still living with Dr. Fastolf?
I was just a boy then, he said, flushing.
How did you get to know her?
When I finished my training as a personnel artist, I was called in to design a wardrobe for her. It gave her pleasure, and after that she used my services in that respect exclusively.
Was it on her recommendation, then, that you received your present position as, might we say, official personnel artist for the members of the Robotics Institute?
She recognized my qualifications. I was tested along with others and won the position on my merits.
But she did recommend you?
Briefly and with annoyance, Gramayana said, yes.
And you felt the only decent return you could make was to offer yourself to her?
Gramayanus grimaced and drew his tongue across his lips as though tasting something unpleasant. That is disgusting. I suppose an Earthman would think in such a way. My offer meant only that it pleased me to do so.
Because she is attractive and has a warm personality?
Gramayanus hesitated. Well, I wouldn't say she has a warm personality, he said cautiously, but certainly she's attractive.
I've been told that you offer yourself to everybody without distinction.
That is a lie.
What is a lie? That you offer yourself to everybody, or that I have been told so?
That I offer myself to everybody. Who said that?
I don't know that it would serve any purpose to answer that question. Would you expect me to quote you as a source of embarrassing information? Would you speak freely to me if you thought I would?
Well, whoever said it was a liar.
Perhaps it was merely dramatic exaggeration. Had you offered yourself to others before you offered yourself to Dr. Vasilia?
Gramayanus looked away. Once or twice, never seriously.
But Dr. Vasilia was someone you were serious about.
Well,
it is my understanding you offered yourself to her repeatedly, which is quite against Auroran custom.
Oh, Auroran custom!
Gramayanus began furiously. Then he pressed his lips together firmly and his forehead furrowed.
See here, Mr. Bailey, can I speak to you confidentially?
Yes, all my questions are intended to satisfy myself that you had nothing to do with Jander's death. Once I am satisfied of that, you may be sure I'll keep your remarks in confidence.
Very well, then. It's nothing wrong. It's nothing I'm ashamed of, you understand. It's just that I have a strong sense of privacy. And I have a right to that if I wish, don't I?
Absolutely, said Bailey consolingly.
You see, I feel that social sex is best when there is a profound love and affection between partners.
I imagine that's very true.
And then there's no need for others, wouldn't you say?
It sounds plausible.
I've always dreamed of finding the perfect partner and never seeking anyone else. They call it monogamy. It doesn't exist on Aurora, but on some worlds it does. And they have it on Earth, don't they, Mr. Bailey?
In theory, Mr. Gramayanus.
It's what I want. I've looked for it for years. When I experimented with sex sometimes, I could tell something was missing. Then I met Dr. Vasilia, and she told me, well, people get confidential with their personnel artists because it's very personal work. And this is the really confidential part.
Well, go on.
Gramayanus licked his lips. If what I say now gets out, I'm ruined. She'll do her best to see to it that I get no further commissions. Are you sure this has something to do with the case?
I assure you with as much force as I can, Mr. Gramayanus, that this can be totally important.
Well, then,
Gramayanus did not look quite convinced.
The fact is that I gathered from what Dr. Vasilia told me in bits and pieces that she is...
His voice dropped to a whisper.
A virgin.
I see, said Bailey quietly, remembering Vasilia's certainty that her father's refusal had distorted her life and getting a firmer understanding of her hatred of her father.
That excited me. It seemed to me I could have her all to myself, and I would be the only one that she would ever have. I can't explain how much that meant to me. It made her look gloriously beautiful in my eyes, and I just wanted her so much.
So you offered yourself to her?
Yes.
Repeatedly. You weren't discouraged by her refusals?
It just reinforced her virginity, so to speak, and made me more eager. It was more exciting that it wasn't easy. I can't explain, and I don't expect you to understand.
Actually, Mr. Gramayanus, I do understand. But there came a time when you stopped offering yourself to Dr. Vasilia?
Well, yes.
And began offering yourself to Gladia?
Well, yes.
Repeatedly?
Well, yes.
Why? Why the change?
Gromianus said, Dr. Vasilia finally made it clear that there was no chance, and then Gladia came along, and she looked like Dr. Vasilia, and that was it.
Bailey said, But Gladia is no virgin. She was married on Solaria, and she experimented rather widely on Aurora, I am told.
I knew about that, but she stopped. You see, she's a Solarian by birth, not an Auroran, and she didn't quite understand Auroran customs. But she stopped because she doesn't like what she calls promiscuity.
Did she tell you that?
Yes. Monogamy is the custom on Solaria. She wasn't happily married, but it is still the custom she's used to. So she never enjoyed the Auroran way when she tried it. And monogamy is what I want, too, do you see?
I see. But how did you meet her in the first place?
I just met her. She was on the hyperwave when she arrived in Aurora, a romantic refugee from Solaria, and she played a part in that hyperwave drama.
Yes, yes, but there was something else, wasn't there?
I don't know what else you want.
Well, let me guess. Didn't there come a point when Dr. Vasilia said she was rejecting you forever, and didn't she suggest an alternative to you?
Gromianus, in sudden fury, shouted, Did Dr. Vasilia tell you that?
Not in so many words, but I think I know what happened even so. Did she not tell you that it might be advantageous if you looked up a new arrival on the planet, a young lady from Solaria who was a ward or protege of Dr. Fastolf, who you know is Dr. Vasilia's father? Did Dr. Vasilia perhaps not tell you that people thought this young lady, Gladia, rather resembled herself, but that she was younger and had a warmer personality? Did Dr. Vasilia not, in short, encourage you to transfer your attentions from herself to Gladia? Gromianus was visibly suffering. His eyes flicked to those of Bailey and away again. It was the first time that Bailey saw in the eyes of any spacer a look of fright, or was it awe? Bailey shook his head slightly. He must not take too much satisfaction at having overawed a spacer. It could damage his objectivity. He said, Well, am I right or wrong? And Gromianus said in a low voice,
That hyperwave show was no exaggeration, then. Do you read minds?
50. Bailey said calmly, I just ask questions, and you haven't answered directly. Am I right or wrong?
Gromianus said, It didn't quite happen like that. Not just like that. She did talk about Gladia, but...
He bit at his lower lip and then said,
Well... It amounted to what you said. It was just about the way you described it.
And you were not disappointed? You found that Gladia did resemble Dr. Vasilia?
In a way, she did. Gromianus's eyes brightened. But not really. Stand them side by side, and you'll see the difference. Gladia has much greater delicacy and grace, a greater spirit of fun.
Have you offered yourself to Vasilia since you met Gladia?
Are you mad? Of course not.
But you have offered yourself to Gladia?
Yes.
And she rejected you?
Well, yes, but you have to understand that she has to be sure, as I would have to be. Think what a mistake I would have made if I had moved Dr. Vasilia to accept me. Gladia doesn't want to make that mistake, and I don't blame her.
But you don't think it would be a mistake for her to accept you, so you have offered yourself again and again and again. Gromianus stared vacantly at Bailey for a moment, and then seemed to shudder. He thrust out his lower lip as though he were a rebellious child.
You say it in an insulting way.
I'm sorry. I don't mean it to be insulting. Please answer the question.
Well, I have.
How many times have you offered yourself?
I haven't counted. 4 times. Well, 5. Or maybe more.
And she has always rejected you.
Yes, or I wouldn't have to offer again, would I?
Does she reject you angrily?
Oh, no, that's not Gladia. Very kindly.
Has it made you offer yourself to anyone else?
What?
Well, Gladia has rejected you. One way of responding would be to offer yourself to someone else. Why not, if Gladia doesn't want you?
No, I don't want anyone else.
Why is that, do you suppose?
And strenuously, Gromianus said, How should I know why that is? I want Gladia. It's a kind of madness, except that I think it's the best kind of insanity. I'd be mad not to have that kind of madness.
I don't expect you to understand.
Have you tried to explain this to Gladia? She might understand.
Never. I'd distress her. I'd embarrass her. You don't talk about such things. I should see a mentologist.
Have you?
No.
Why not?
Grimianus frowned. You have a way of asking the rudest questions, Earthman.
Perhaps because I'm an Earthman. I know no better. But I'm also an investigator, and I must know these things. Why have you not seen a mentologist? Surprisingly, Grimianus laughed.
I told you, the cure would be greater madness than the disease. I would rather be with Gladia and be rejected than be with anyone else and be accepted. Imagine having your mind out of whack and wanting it to stay out of whack. Any mentologist would put me in for major treatment.
Bailey thought a while, then said, Do you know whether Dr. Vasilia is a mentologist in any way?
She's a roboticist. They say that's the closest thing to it. If you know how a robot works, you've got a hint as to how a human brain works, or so they say.
Does it occur to you that Vasilia knows these strange feelings you have in connection with Gladia?
Grimiana stiffened. I've never told her. I mean, in so many words.
Isn't it possible that she understands your feelings without having to ask? Is she aware that you have repeatedly offered yourself to Gladia?
Well, she would ask how I was getting along. In the way of long-standing acquaintanceship, you know. I would say certain things, nothing intimate.
Are you sure that it was never anything intimate? Surely she encouraged you to continue to offer.
You know, now that you mention it, I seem to see it all in a new way. I don't see quite how you managed to put it into my head. It's the questions you ask, I suppose, but it seems to me now that she did continue to encourage my friendship with Gladia. She actively supported it.
He looked very uneasy.
This never occurred to me before. I never really thought about it.
Why do you think she encouraged you to make repeated offers to Gladia?
Grimianus twitched his eyebrows ruefully, and his finger went to his mustache. I suppose some might guess she was trying to get rid of me, trying to make sure I wouldn't want to bother her. He made a small, laughing sound. That's not very complimentary to me, is it?
Did Dr. Vasilia cease being friendly with you?
Not at all. She was more friendly, if anything.
Did she try to tell you how to be more successful with Gladia, to show a greater interest in Gladia's work, for example?
She didn't have to do that. Gladia's work and mine are very similar. I work with human beings, and she with robots, but we're both designers, artists. That does make for closeness, you know. We even help each other at times. When I'm not offering and being rejected, we're good friends. That's a lot when you come to think of it.
Did Dr. Vasilia suggest you show a greater interest in Dr. Fastolf's work?
Why should she suggest that? I don't know anything about Dr. Fastolf's work.
Gladia might be interested in her benefactor's work, and it might be a way for you to ingratiate yourself with her.
Grimianus's eyes narrowed. He rose with almost explosive force, walked to the other end of the room, came back, stood in front of Bailey, and said, Now, you look here. I'm not the biggest brain on the planet, not even the second biggest, but I'm not a blithering idiot. I see what you're getting at, you know.
Oh?
All your questions have served to sort of wriggle me into saying that Dr. Vasilia got me to fall in love. That's it.
He stopped in sudden surprise.
I'm in love, like in the historical novels.
He thought about that with the light of wonder in his eyes. Then the anger returned.
That she got me to fall in love and to stay in love, so that I could find out things from Dr. Fastolf and learn how to immobilize that robot, Jander.
You don't think that's so?
No, it's not, shouted Grimianus. I don't know anything about robotics, anything. No matter how carefully anything about robotics were explained to me, I wouldn't understand it. And I don't think Gladia would either. Besides, I never asked anyone about robotics. I was never told by Dr. Fastolf or anyone anything about robotics. No one ever suggested I get involved with robotics. Dr. Vasilia never suggested it. Your whole rotten theory doesn't work.
He shot his arms out to either side.
It doesn't work, forget it.
He sat back, folded his arms rigidly across his chest, and forced his lips together in a thin line, making a small mustache bristle. Bailey looked up at the unsegmented orange, which was still humming its low, pleasantly varying tune, and displaying a gentle change of color as it swayed hypnotically through a small, slow arc. If Grimianus's outburst had upset his line of attack, he showed no sign of it.
He said,
I understand what you're saying, but it's still true that you see much of Gladia, isn't it?
Yes, I do.
Your repeated offers do not offend her, and her repeated rejections do not offend you?
Gromyanus shrugged. My offers are polite. Her refusals are gentle. Why should we be offended?
But how do you spend time together? Sex is out, obviously, and you don't talk robotics. What do?
Is that all there is to companionship, sex and robotics? We do a great deal together. We talk, for one thing. She is very curious about Aurora, and I spend hours describing the planet. She's seen very little of it, you know. And she spends hours telling me about Solaria and what a hellhole it is. I'd rather live on Earth, no offense intended. And there's her dead husband. What a miserable character he was. Gladia's had a hard life, poor woman. We go to concerts. I took her to the Art Institute a few times. And we work together. I told you that. We go over my designs, or her designs, together. To be perfectly honest, I don't see that working on robots is very rewarding. But we all have our own notions, you know. For that matter, she seemed to be amused when I explained why it was so important to cut hair correctly. Her own hair isn't quite right, you know. But mostly we go for walks.
Walks? Where?
Nowhere particularly, just walks. That is her habit, because of the way she was brought up on Solaria. Have you ever been on Solaria? Yes, you have been, of course, I'm sorry. On Solaria, there are these huge estates with only one or two human beings on them, just robots otherwise. You can walk for miles and be completely alone, and Gladia says that it makes you feel as though you own the entire planet. The robots are always there, of course, keeping an eye on you and taking care of you, but of course they keep out of sight. Gladia misses that feeling of world ownership here on Aurora.
Do you mean that she wants world ownership?
You mean a kind of lust for power, Gladia? That's crazy. All she means is that she misses the feeling of being alone with nature. I don't see it myself, you understand, but I like humoring her. Of course, you can't quite get the Solarian feeling in Aurora. There are bound to be people about, especially in the Eos metropolitan area. And robots haven't been programmed to keep out of sight. In fact, Aurorans generally walk with robots. Still, I know some routes that are pleasant and not very crowded, and Gladia enjoys them.
Do you enjoy them, too?
Well, only because I would be with Gladia. Aurorans are walkers, too, by and large, but I must admit I am not. I had protesting muscles at first, and Vasilia laughed at me.
She knew you went on walks, did she?
Well, I came in limping one day and creaking at the thighs, so I had to explain. She laughed and said it was a good idea, and the best way to get a walker to accept an offer was to walk with them. Keep it up, she said, and she'll cancel her rejection before you get a chance to offer again. She'll make the offer herself. As it happened, Gladia didn't, but eventually I grew to like the walks very much, just the same. He seemed to have gotten over his flash of anger, and was now very much at his ease. He might have been thinking of the walks, Bailey thought, for there was a half-smile on his face. He looked rather likable and vulnerable, with his mind back on who knew what conversational passage on a walk that had taken them who knew where. Bailey almost smiled in response.
Vasilia knew then that you continued the walks.
I suppose so. I began to take Wednesdays and Saturdays off because that fit in with Gladia's schedule choice. And Vasilia would sometimes joke about my WS walks when I brought in some sketches.
Did Dr. Vasilia ever join the walks?
Certainly not. Bailey shifted in his seat and stared intently at his fingertips as he said,
I presume you had robots accompanying you on your walks.
Absolutely. One of mine, one of hers. They kept rather out of the way, though. They didn't tag along in what Gladia called Aurora fashion. She wanted Solarian solitude, she said. So I obliged, though at first I got a crick in my neck looking around to see if Brundage was with me.
And which robot accompanied Gladia?
It wasn't always the same one. Whichever he was, he held off, too. I didn't get to talk to him.
What about Jander?
Some of the sunniness left Gromyanus' expression at once.
What about him? He asked.
Did he ever come along? If he did, you would know, wouldn't you?
A humaniform robot? I certainly would, and he did not accompany us, not ever.
Are you certain?
Completely certain. Gromyanus scowled. I imagine she thought him far too valuable to waste on duties any ordinary robot could perform.
You seem annoyed. Did you think so, too?
He was her robot. I didn't worry about it.
And you never saw him when you were at Gladia's establishment?
Never.
Did she ever say anything about him, discuss him?
Not that I recall.
Didn't you consider that strange?
Gromyanus shook his head.
No. Why talk about robots?
Bailey's somber eyes fixed on the other's face. Did you have any idea of the relationship between Gladia and Xander?
Grumianus said, Are you going to tell me that there was sex between them?
Bailey said, Would you be surprised if I did?
Grumianus said stolidly, It happens. It's not unusual. You can use a robot sometimes if you feel like it. And a humaniform robot, completely humaniform, I believe.
Completely, said Bailey with an appropriate gesture. Grumianus's lips curved downward.
Well, then, it would be hard for a woman to resist.
She resisted you. Doesn't it bother you that Gladia would prefer a robot to you?
Well, if it comes to that, I'm not sure that I believe this is true. But if it is, it's nothing to worry about. A robot is just a robot. A woman and a robot, or a man and a robot, it's just masturbation.
You honestly never knew of the relationship, Mr. Grumianus? You never suspected?
I never gave it any thought, insisted Grumianus.
Didn't know, or did know, but paid it no mind.
Grumianus scowled. You're pushing again. What do you want me to say? Now that you put it into my head and push, it seems to me, if I look back, that maybe I was wondering about something like that. Just the same, I never felt anything was happening before you started asking questions.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. Don't badger me.
I'm not badgering you. I'm just wondering if it were possible that you did know that Gladia was regularly engaging in sex with Xander, that you knew that you would never be accepted as her lover as long as that was so, that you wanted her so much that you would stop at nothing to eliminate Xander, that, in short, you were so jealous that you...
And at that moment, Grumianus, as though some tightly coiled spring, held back with difficulty for some minutes, had suddenly twitched loose, hurled himself at Bailey with a loud and incoherent cry. Bailey, taken completely by surprise, pushed backward instinctively, and his chair went over. 51. There were strong arms upon him at once. Bailey felt himself lifted, the chair righted, and was aware that he was in the grip of a robot. How easy it was to forget they were in the room when they stood silent and motionless in their niches. It was neither Daniil nor Giscard who had come to his rescue, however. It was Grumianus's robot, Brundage.
Sir, said Brundage, his voice just a bit unnatural, I hope you are not hurt.
Where were Daniil and Giscard?
The question answered itself at once. The robots had divided the labor neatly and quickly. Daniil and Giscard, estimating instantly that an overturned chair offered less chance of harm to Bailey than a maddened Grumianus, had launched themselves at the host. Brundage, seeing at once that he was not needed in that direction, saw to the welfare of the guest. Grumianus, still standing, his breath heaving, was completely immobilized in the careful double grasp of Bailey's robots. Grumianus said, in very little above a whisper, Release me. I am in control of myself.
Yes, sir, said Giscard.
Of course, Mr. Grumianus, said Daniil, with what was almost suavity. But although their arms released their hold, neither moved back for a period of time. Grumianus looked right and left, adjusted the smoothness of his clothing, and then deliberately sat down. His breathing was still rapid, and his hair was, to a small extent, in disarray. Bailey now stood, one hand on the back of the chair on which he had been sitting. Grumianus said, I am sorry, Mr. Bailey, for losing control. It is something I have not done in my adult life. You accused me of being jealous. It is a word no respectable Auroran would use of another. But I should have remembered you were an Earthman. It is a word we encounter only in historical romances, and even then the word is usually spelled with a J followed by a dash. Of course, that is not so on your world. I understand that.
I am sorry, too, Mr. Grumianus, said Bailey gravely, that my forgetfulness of Auroran custom led me astray in this instance. I assure you that such a lapse will not happen again.
He seated himself and said,
I don't know that there is much more to discuss.
Grumianus did not seem to be listening. When I was a child, he said, I would sometimes push against another and be pushed, and it would be a while before the robots would take the trouble to separate us, of course.
Daniil said, If I may explain, partner Elijah, it has been well established that total suppression of aggression in the very young has undesirable consequences. A certain amount of youthful play involving physical competition is permitted, even encouraged, provided no real hurt is involved. Robots in charge of the young are carefully programmed to be able to distinguish the chances and level of harm that may take place. I, for instance, am not properly programmed in this respect and would not qualify as a guardian of the young except under emergency conditions for brief periods. Nor would Giscard. Bailey said,
Such aggressive behavior is stopped during adolescence, I suppose.
Gradually, said Daniil, as the level of harm that may be inflicted increases and as the desirability of self-control becomes more pronounced.
Gromyana said, By the time I was ready for higher schooling, I, like all Aurorans, knew quite well that all competition rested on the comparison of mental capacity and talent.
No physical competition, said Bailey.
Certainly, but only in fashions that do not involve deliberate physical contact with intent to injure.
But since you've been an adolescent...
I've attacked no one. Of course I haven't.
I've had the urge to do so on a number of occasions, to be sure. I suppose I wouldn't be entirely normal if I hadn't, but until this moment I've been able to control it. But then no one ever called me that before.
Bailey said,
It would do no good to attack in any case if you are going to be stopped by robots, would it? I presume there is always a robot within reach on both sides of both the attacker and the attacked.
Certainly. All the more reason for me to be ashamed of having lost my self-control. I trust that this won't have to go into your report.
I assure you I will tell no one of this. It has nothing to do with the case.
Thank you. Did you say that the interview is over?
I think it is.
In that case, will you do as I have asked you to do?
What is that?
To tell Gladia I had nothing to do with Jander's immobilization.
Bailey hesitated.
I will tell her that that is my opinion.
Gromyana said, Please make it stronger than that. I want her to be absolutely certain that I had nothing to do with it. All the more so if she was fond of the robot from a sexual standpoint. I couldn't bear to have her think I was... Being a Solarian, she might think that.
Yes, she might, said Bailey thoughtfully.
But look, said Gromyanus, speaking quickly and earnestly, I don't know anything about robots, and no one, Dr. Vasilia or anyone else, has told me anything about them, how they work, I mean. There is just no way in which I could have destroyed Jander.
Bailey seemed, for a moment, to be deep in thought. Then he said, with clear reluctance,
I can't help but believe you. To be sure, I don't know everything. And it is possible, I say this without meaning offense, that either you or Dr. Vasilia, or both, are lying. I know surprisingly little about the intimate nature of Auroran society, and I can perhaps be easily fooled. And yet, I can't help but believe you. Nevertheless, I can't do more than tell Gladia that, in my opinion, you are completely innocent. I must say, in my opinion, however. I am sure she will find that strong enough.
Gromyanus said gloomily, Then I will have to be satisfied with that. If it will help, though, I assure you, on the word of an Auroran citizen, that I am innocent.
Bailey smiled slightly.
I wouldn't dream of doubting your word, but my training forces me to rely on objective evidence alone.
He stood up, stared solemnly at Gromyanus for a moment, then said,
What I am about to say should not be taken amiss, Mr. Gromyanus. I take it that you are interested in having me give Gladia this reassurance because you want to retain her friendship.
I want that very much, Mr. Bailey.
And you intend on some suitable occasion to offer yourself again?
Gromyanus flushed, swallowed visibly, then said,
Yes, I do.
May I then give you a word of advice, sir? Don't do it.
You may keep your advice if that's what you're going to tell me. I don't intend ever to give up.
I mean, do not go through the usual formal procedure. You might consider simply...
Bailey looked away, feeling unaccountably embarrassed,
putting your arms around her and kissing her.
No, said Gromyanus, earnestly. Please, an Auroran woman would not endure that, nor an Auroran man.
Mr. Gromyanus, won't you remember that Gladia is not Auroran? She is Solarian, and has other customs, other traditions. I would try it if I were you.
Bailey's level gaze masked a sudden internal fury. What was Gromyanus to him that he should give such advice? Why tell another to do that which he himself longed to do? Chapter 13 Amadiro 52
Bailey got back to business with a somewhat deeper baritone to his voice than was usual. He said, Mr. Grimianus, you mentioned the name of the head of the Robotics Institute earlier. Could you give me that name again?
Keldon Amadiro.
And would there be some way of reaching him from here?
Grimianus said, Well, yes and no. You can reach his receptionist or his assistant. I doubt that you'll reach him. He's a rather standoffish person, I'm told. I don't know him personally, of course. I've seen him now and then, but I've never talked to him.
I take it, then, he doesn't use you as a clothes designer or for personal grooming?
I don't know that he uses anyone. And from the few occasions when I've seen him, I can tell you he looks it, though I'd rather you didn't repeat that remark.
I'm sure you're right, but I'll keep the confidence,
said Bailey gravely.
I would like to try to reach him, despite his standoffish reputation. If you have a trimensic outlet, would you mind my making use of it for that purpose?
Brundage can make the call for you.
No, I think my partner, Daniil, should. That is, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all, said Grimianus. The outlet is in there, so just follow me, Daniil. The pattern you must use is 75, 30, up 20.
Daniil bowed his head. Thank you, sir.
The room with the trimensic outlet was quite empty, except for a thin pillar toward one side of the room. It ended waist high in a flat surface on which there was a rather complicated console.
The pillar stood in the center of a circle marked off on the light green floor in a neutral gray. Near it was an identical circle in size and color, but on the second one there stood no pillar. Daniil stepped to the pillar, and as he did so, the circle on which it stood glowed with a faint white radiance. His hand moved over the console, his fingers flicking too quickly for Bailey to make out clearly what it was they did. It took only a second, and then the other circle glowed in precisely the same way. A robot appeared on it, three-dimensional in appearance, but with a very faint flicker that gave away the fact that it was a holographic image. Next to him was a console like that next to which Daniil stood. But the robot's console also flickered and was also an image. Daniil said, I am R. Daniil Olivaugh. He faintly emphasized the R so the robot would not mistake him for a human being. And I represent my partner, Elijah Bailey, a plainclothesman from Earth. My partner would like to speak with Master Roboticist Keldon Amadiro. The robot said, Master Roboticist Amadiro is in conference. Would it be sufficient to speak to Roboticist Cecis? Daniil looked quickly in Bailey's direction. Bailey nodded, and Daniil said, That will be quite satisfactory. The robot said, If you will ask plainclothesman Bailey to take your place, I will try to locate Roboticist Cecis. Daniil said smoothly, It would perhaps be better if you were first to... But Bailey called out, It's all right, Daniil. I don't mind waiting. Daniil said, Partner Elijah, as the personal representative of Master Roboticist Han Fastoff, you have assimilated his social status, at least temporarily. It is not your place to have to wait for... It's all right, Daniil, said Bailey, with enough emphasis to preclude further discussion. I don't wish to create delay by a dispute over social etiquette.
Daniil stepped off the circle, and Bailey stepped on. He felt a slight tingle as he did so, perhaps a purely imaginary one, but it quickly passed. The robot's image, standing on the other circle, faded and disappeared. Bailey waited patiently, and eventually another image darkened and took on apparent three-dimensionality. Roboticist Maloon Cecis here, said the figure, in a rather sharp, clear voice. He had the close-cut bronze hair that alone sufficed to give him what Bailey thought of as a typical spacer look, though there was a certain unspacer-like asymmetry to the line of his nose. Bailey said quietly,
I am plainclothesman Elijah Bailey from Earth. I would like to speak with Master Roboticist Keldon Amadiro.
Do you have an appointment, plainclothesman?
No, sir.
You will have to make one if you wish to see him, and there's no time slot available for this week or next.
I am plainclothesman Elijah Bailey of Earth.
So I have been given to understand. It doesn't alter the facts.
Bailey said, At the request of Dr. Han Fastoff, and with the permission of the World Legislature of Aurora, I am investigating the murder of robot Jander Panel.
The murder of robot Jander Panel?
Asked Cecis so politely as to indicate contempt. Roboticide, if you prefer, then. On Earth, the destruction of a robot would not be so great a matter. But on Aurora, where robots are treated more or less as human beings, it seemed to me that the word murder might be used.
Cecis said, Nevertheless, whether murder, roboticide, or nothing at all, it is still impossible to see Master Roboticist Amadiro.
May I leave a message for him?
You may.
Will it be delivered to him instantly, now?
I can try, but obviously I can make no guarantee.
Good enough. I will make several points, and I will number them. Perhaps you would like to make notes.
Cece smiled faintly. I think I will be able to remember.
First, where there is a murder, there is a murderer, and I would like to give Dr. Amadiro a chance to speak in his own defense.
What? Said Cece's.
And Grimaeus, watching from the other side of the room, let his jaw drop. Bailey managed to imitate the faint smile that had suddenly disappeared from the other's lips.
Am I too fast for you, sir? Would you like to make notes, after all?
Are you accusing the master roboticist of having had anything to do with this gender panel business?
On the contrary, roboticist. It is because I don't want to accuse him that I must see him. I would hate to imply any connection between the master roboticist and the immobilized robot on the basis of incomplete information, when a word from him might make everything clear.
You are mad.
Very well. Then tell the master roboticist that a madman wants a word with him in order to avoid accusing him of murder. That's my first point. I have a second. Could you tell him that the same madman has just completed a detailed interrogation of personnel artist Santorix Grimaeus and is calling from Grimaeus's establishment? And the third point. Am I going too fast for you?
No. Finish.
The third point is this. It may be that the master roboticist, who surely has a great deal on his mind that is of much moment, does not remember who personnel artist Santorix Grimaeus is. In that case, please identify him as someone living on the Institute grounds who has, in the last year, taken many long walks with Gladia, a woman from Solaria who now lives on Aurora.
I cannot deliver a message so ridiculous and offensive, Earthman.
In that case, would you tell him I will go straight to the legislature, and I will announce that I cannot continue with my investigation, because one Maloon Cece's takes it upon himself to assure me that Master Roboticist Keldon Amadiro will not assist me in the investigation of the destruction of Robot Jander Panel, and will not defend himself against accusations of being responsible for that destruction?
Cece's reddened. You wouldn't dare say anything of the sort.
Wouldn't I? What would I have to lose? On the other hand, how will it sound to the general public? After all, Aurorans are perfectly aware that Dr. Amadiro is second only to Dr. Fastolf himself in expertise in robotics, and that if Fastolf himself is not responsible for the roboticide, is it necessary to continue?
You will find, Earthman, that the laws of Aurora against slander are strict.
Undoubtedly. But if Dr. Amadiro is effectively slandered, his punishment is likely to be greater than mine. But why don't you simply deliver my message now? Then, if he explains just a few minor points, we can avoid all question of slander or accusation or anything of the sort.
Cece's scowled and said stiffly, I will tell Dr. Amadiro this, and I will strongly advise him to refuse to see you.
He disappeared.
Again, Bailey waited patiently, while Grimaeus gestured fiercely and said in a loud whisper,
You can't do that, Bailey. You can't do it.
Bailey waved him quiet. After some 5 minutes, it seemed much longer to Bailey, Cece's reappeared looking enormously angry.
He said, Dr. Amadiro will take my place here in a few minutes and we'll talk to you. Wait.
And Bailey said at once,
There is no point in waiting. I will come directly to Dr. Amadiro's office and I will see him there.
He stepped off the gray circle and made a cutting gesture to Daniil, who promptly broke the connection.
Grimaeus said with a kind of strangled gasp, You can't talk to Dr. Amadiro's people that way, Earthman.
I just have, said Bailey.
He'll have you thrown off the planet within 12 hours.
If I don't make progress in straightening out this mess, I may in any case be thrown off the planet within 12 hours.
Daniil said, Partner Elijah, I fear that Mr. Grimaeus is justified in his alarm. The Auroran World Legislature cannot do more than evict you, since you are not an Auroran citizen. Nevertheless, they can insist that the Earth authorities punish you severely, and Earth will do so. They could not resist an Auroran demand in this case. I would not wish you to be punished in this way, Partner Elijah.
Bailey said heavily, Nor do I wish the punishment, Daniil, but I must take the chance. Mr. Grimaeus, I am sorry that I had to tell him I was calling from your establishment. I had to do something to persuade him to see me, and I felt he might attach importance to that fact. What I said was, after all, the truth.
Gromianus shook his head. If I had known what you were going to do, Mr. Bailey, I would not have permitted you to call for my establishment. I feel sure that I'm going to lose my position here, and, with bitterness, what are you going to do for me that will make up for that?
I will do my best, Mr. Gromianus, to see that you do not lose your position. I feel confident that you will be in no trouble. If I fail, however, you are free to describe me as a madman who made wild accusations against you and frightened you with threats of slander, so that you had to let me use your viewer. I'm sure Dr. Amadeiro will believe you. After all, you have already sent him a memo complaining that I have been slandering you, have you not?
Bailey lifted his hand in farewell.
Goodbye, Mr. Grubianus. Thank you again. Don't worry. And remember what I said about Gladia.
With Daniil and Giscard sandwiching him fore and aft, Bailey stepped out of Grubianus' establishment, scarcely conscious of the fact that he was moving out into the open once more.
53. Once out in the open, it was a different matter. Bailey stopped and looked up.
Odd, he said.
I didn't think that that much time had passed, even allowing for the fact that the Auroran day is a little shorter than standard.
What is it, partner Elijah? Asked Daniil solicitously.
The sun has set. I wouldn't have thought it.
The sun has not yet set, sir, put in Giscard. It is about 2 hours before sunset. Daniil said, It is the gathering storm, partner Elijah. The clouds are thickening, but the storm will not actually break for some time yet. Bailey shivered. Dark, in itself, did not disturb him. In fact, when outside, night, with its suggestion of enclosing walls, was far more soothing than the day, which broadened the horizons and opened space in every direction. The trouble was that this was neither day nor night. Again, he tried to remember what it had been like that time it had rained when he had been outside. It suddenly occurred to him that he had never been out when it snowed, and that he wasn't even sure what the rain of crystalline solid water was like. Descriptions in words were surely insufficient. The younger ones sometimes went out to go sliding or sledding or whatever and returned shrieking with excitement, but always glad to get within the city walls. Ben had once tried to make a pair of skis, according to directions in some ancient book or other, and had gotten himself half buried in a drift of the white stuff. And even Ben's descriptions of what it was like to see and feel snow were distressingly vague and unsatisfying. Then, too, no one went out when it was actually snowing, as opposed to having the material merely lying about on the ground. Bailey told himself at this point that the only thing everyone agreed on was that it only snowed when it was very cold. It was not very cold now, it was merely cool. Those clouds did not mean it was going to snow. Somehow, he felt only minimally consoled. This was not like the cloudy days on Earth, which he had seen. On Earth, the clouds were lighter, he was sure of that. They were grayish-white, even when they covered the sky solidly. Here, the light, what there was of it, was rather bilious, a ghastly yellowish slate. Was that because Aurora's sun was more orange than Earth's was? He said, Is the color of the sky unusual? Daniil looked up at the sky. No, partner Elijah, it is a storm.
Do you often have storms like this?
At this time of year, yes, occasional thunderstorms. This is no surprise. It was predicted in the weather forecast yesterday and again this morning. It will be over well before daybreak, and the fields can use the water. We've been a bit subnormal in rainfall lately.
And it gets this cold, too? Is that normal, too?
Oh, yes. But let us get into the airfoil, partner Elijah. It can be heated.
Bailey nodded and walked toward the airfoil, which lay on the grassy plot where it had been brought to rest before lunch. He paused. Wait. I did not ask Gromianus for directions to Amadeiro's establishment or office.
No need, partner Elijah, said Daniil immediately, his hand in the crook of Bailey's elbow propelling him gently but unmistakably onward. Friend Giscard has the map of the Institute clearly in his memory banks, and he will take us to the administration building. It is very likely that Dr. Amadeiro has his office there. Giscard said, My information is to the effect that Dr. Amadeiro's office is in the administration building. If by some chance he is not at his office but is in his establishment, that is nearby. Again, Bailey found himself crammed into the front seat between the two robots. He welcomed Daniil particularly with his human-like body warmth, although Giscard's textile-like outermost layer was insulating and not as cold to the touch as bare metal would have been. He was the less attractive of the two in Bailey's current chilly state. Bailey caught himself on the verge of putting an arm around Daniil's shoulder.
with the intention of finding comfort by drawing him even closer. He brought his arm down to his lap in confusion. He said, "I don't like the way it looks out there." Daniil, perhaps in an effort to take Bailey's mind off the appearance outside, said, "Partner Elijah, how is it you knew that Dr. Vasilia had encouraged Mr. Gromianus's interest in Miss Gladia? I did not see that you had received any evidence to that effect."
"I didn't," said Bailey. "I've been desperate enough to play long shots, that is, to gamble on events of low probability. Gladia told me that Gromianus was the one person sufficiently interested in her to offer himself repeatedly. I thought he might have killed Jander out of jealousy. I didn't think he could possibly know enough about robotics to do it, but then I heard that Fastoff's daughter Vasilia was a roboticist and resembled Gladia physically. I wondered if Gromianus, having been fascinated by Gladia, might not have been fascinated by Vasilia earlier, and if the killing might possibly have been the result of a conspiracy between the two. It was by hinting obscurely at the existence of such a conspiracy that I was able to persuade Vasilia to see me."
Daniil said, "But there was no conspiracy, Partner Elijah, at least as far as the destruction of Jander was concerned. Vasilia and Gromianus could not have engineered that destruction, even if they had worked together."
"Granted, and yet Vasilia had been made nervous by the suggestion of having had a connection with Gromianus. Why? When Gromianus told us of having been attracted to Vasilia first, and then to Gladia, I wondered if the connection between the two had been more indirect, if Vasilia might have encouraged the transfer for some reason more distantly connected, but connected nevertheless to Jander's death. After all, there had to be some connection between the two. Vasilia's reaction to the original suggestion showed that. My suspicion was correct. Vasilia had engineered Gromianus's switch from one woman to the other. Gromianus was astonished at my knowing this, and that too was useful. For if the matter were something completely innocent, there would have been no reason to make a secret of it. And a secret it obviously was. You remember that Vasilia mentioned nothing of urging Gromianus to turn to Gladia. When I told her that Gromianus had offered himself to Gladia, she acted as though that was the first time she had heard of it."
"But, Partner Elijah, of what importance is this?"
"We may find out. It seemed to me that there was no importance in it to either Gromianus or Vasilia. Therefore, if it had any importance at all, it might be that a third person was involved. If it had anything to do with the Jander affair, then it ought to be a roboticist still more skillful than Vasilia, and that might be Amadiro. So I hinted to him of the existence of a conspiracy by deliberately pointing out I had been questioning Gromianus and was calling from his establishment, and that worked too."
"Yet I still don't know what it all means, Partner Elijah."
"Nor I, except for some speculations. But perhaps we'll find out at Amadiro's. Our situation is so bad, you see, we have nothing to lose by guessing and gambling."
During this exchange, the airfoil had risen on its air jets and had moved to a moderate height. It cleared a line of bushes and was now once again speeding along over grassy areas and graveled roads. Bailey noticed that where the grass was taller, it was swept to one side by the wind, as though an invisible and much larger airfoil were passing over it. Bailey said,
"Giscard, you have been recording the conversations which have taken place in your presence, haven't you?"
"Yes, sir."
"And can reproduce them at need?"
"Yes, sir."
"And can easily locate and reproduce some particular statement made by some given person?"
"Yes, sir. You would not have to listen to the entire recording."
"And could you at need serve as a witness in a courtroom?"
"Aye, sir. No, sir." Giscard's eyes were fixed firmly on the road. Since a robot can be directed to lie by a skillful enough command, and not all the exhortations or threats of a judge might help, the law wisely considers a robot an incompetent witness.
"But in that case, of what use are your recordings?"
"That, sir, is a different thing. A recording once made cannot be altered on simple command, though it might be erased. Such a recording can therefore be admitted as evidence. There are no firm precedents, however, and whether it is or is not admitted depends on the individual case and on the individual judge."
Bailey could not tell whether that statement was depressing in itself or whether he was influenced by the unpleasant, livid light that bathed the landscape. He said, "Can you see well enough to drive, Giscard?"
"Certainly, sir, but I do not need to. The airfoil is equipped with a computerized radar that would enable it to avoid obstacles on its own, even if I were unaccountably to fail in my task. It was this that was in operation yesterday morning when we traveled comfortably, though all the windows were opacified."
"Partner Elijah," said Daniil, again veering the conversation away from Bailey's uncomfortable awareness of the coming storm, "do you have hope that Dr. Amadiro might indeed be helpful?" Giscard brought the airfoil to rest on a wide lawn before a broad but not very high building, with an intricately carved facade that was clearly new, and yet gave the impression of imitating something quite old. Bailey knew it was the administration building without being told. He said,
"No, Daniil, I suspect that Amadeiro may be far too intelligent to give us the least handle to grasp him by."
"And if that is so, what do you plan to do next?"
"I don't know," said Bailey with a grim feeling of déjà vu, "but I'll try to think of something."
54. When Bailey entered the administration building, his first feeling was one of relief at removing himself from the unnatural lighting outside. The second was one of wry amusement. Here on Aurora, the establishments, the private dwelling places, were all strictly Auroran. He couldn't for a moment, while sitting in Gladia's living room, or breakfasting in Fastolf's dining room, or talking in Vasilia's workroom, or making use of Grumianus's trimensional viewing device, have thought himself on Earth. All four were distinct from each other, but all fell within a certain genus, widely different from that of the underground apartments on Earth. The administration building, however, breathed officialdom, and that apparently transcended ordinary human variety. It did not belong to the same genus as the dwelling places on Aurora, any more than an official building in Bailey's home city resembled an apartment in the dwelling sectors, but the two official buildings on the two worlds of such widely different natures strangely resembled each other. This was the first place on Aurora where, for an instant, Bailey might have imagined himself on Earth. Here were the same long, cold, bare corridors, the same lowest common denominator of design and decoration, with every light source designed so as to irritate as few people as possible and to please just as few. There were some touches here that would have been absent on Earth. The occasional suspended pots of plants, for instance, flourishing in the light and outfitted with devices, Bailey guessed, for controlled and automatic watering. That natural touch was absent on Earth, and its presence did not delight him. Might such pots not sometimes fall? Might they not attract insects? Might not the water drip? There were some things missing here, too. On Earth, when one was within a city, there was always the vast warm hum of people and machinery, even in the most coldly official of administrative structures. It was the busy buzz of brotherhood, to use the phrase popular among Earth's politicians and journalists. Here, on the other hand, it was quiet. Bailey had not particularly noticed the quiet in the establishments he had visited that day and the day before, since everything had seemed so unnatural there that one more oddity escaped his notice. Indeed, he had been more aware of the soft susurration of insect life outside, or of the wind through the vegetation, than of the absence of the steady hum of humanity, another popular phrase. Here, however, where there seemed a touch of earth, the absence of the hum was as disconcerting as was the distinct orange touch to the artificial light, which was far more noticeable against the blank off-white of the walls here than among the busy decoration that marked the Auroran establishments. Bailey's reverie did not last long. They were standing just inside the main entrance, and Daniil had held out his arm to stop the other two. Some 30 seconds passed before Bailey, speaking in an automatic whisper in view of the silence everywhere, said,
"Why are we waiting?"
"Because it is advisable to do so, Partner Elijah," said Daniil. "There is a tingle field ahead."
"A what?"
"A tingle field, Partner Elijah. Actually, the name is a euphemism. It stimulates the nerve endings and produces a rather sharp pain. Robots can pass, but human beings cannot. Any breach, of course, whether by human or robot, will set off an alarm."
Bailey said, "How can you tell there's a tingle field?"
"It can be seen, Partner Elijah, if you know what to look for. The air seems to twinkle a bit, and the wall beyond that region has a faint greenish tinge as compared to the wall in front of it."
"I'm not at all sure I see it," said Bailey indignantly. "What's to prevent me or any innocent outsider from walking into it and experiencing agony?"
Daniil said, "Those who are members of the Institute carry a neutralizing device. Those who are visitors are almost always attended by one or more robots who will surely detect the tingle field." A robot was approaching down the corridor on the other side of the field. The twinkling of the field was more easily noted against the muted smoothness of his metallic surface. He seemed to ignore Giscard, but for a moment he hesitated as he looked from Bailey to Daniil and back. And then, having made a decision, he addressed Bailey. "Perhaps," thought Bailey, "Daniil looks too human to be human." The robot said, "Your name, sir?" Bailey said,
"I am plainclothesman Elijah Bailey from Earth. I am accompanied by two robots of the establishment of Dr. Han Fastolf.
Daniil Olava and Giscard Reventlov.
Identification, sir?
Giscard's serial number flared out in soft phosphorescence on the left side of his chest. I vouch for the other two, friend, he said. The robot studied the number a moment, as though comparing it with a file in his memory banks. Then he nodded and said, Serial number accepted. You may pass. Daniil and Giscard moved forward at once, but Bailey found himself edging ahead slowly. He put out one arm as a way of testing the coming of pain. Daniil said, The field is gone, partner Elijah. It will be restored after we have passed through.
Better safe than sorry, thought Bailey, and continued his shuffle till he was well past the point where the barrier of the field might have existed.
The robots, showing no sign of impatience or condemnation, waited for Bailey's reluctant steps to catch up with them. They then stepped onto a helical ramp that was only 2 people wide. The robot was first by himself. Bailey and Daniil stood side by side behind him. Daniil's hand rested lightly but almost possessively on Bailey's elbow, and Giscard brought up the rear. Bailey was conscious of his shoes pointing upward just a bit uncomfortably, and felt vaguely that it would be a little tiresome mounting this too steep ramp and having to lean forward in order to avoid a clumsy slip. Either the soles of his shoes, or the surface of the ramp, or both, ought to be ridged. In fact, neither was. The robot in the lead said, Mr. Bailey, as though warning of something, and the robot's hand then visibly tightened on the railing that it held. At once, the ramp divided into sections that slid against each other to form steps. Immediately thereafter, the whole ramp began to move upward. It made a complete turn, passing up through the ceiling, a section of which had retracted, and when it came to a halt, they were on what was, presumably, the second floor. The steps disappeared, and the four stepped off. Bailey looked back curiously.
I suppose it will service those who want to go down as well, but what if there is a period where more people want to go up than down? It would end up sticking half a kilometer into the sky or into the ground in reverse.
That is an up helix, said Daniil in a low voice. There are separate down helices.
But it has to get down again, doesn't it?
It collapses at the top, or the bottom, depending on which we're speaking of, partner Elijah. And in periods of non-use, it unwinds, so to speak. This up helix is descending now. Bailey looked back. The smooth surface might be sliding downward, but it showed no irregularity or mark whose motion he could notice.
And if someone should want to use it when it has moved up as far as it can?
Then one must wait for the unwinding, which would take less than a minute. There are ordinary flights of stairs as well, partner Elijah, and most Aurorans are not reluctant to use them. Robots almost always use the stairs. Since you are a visitor, you are being offered the courtesy of the helix. They were walking down a corridor again toward a door more ornate than the others.
They are offering me courtesy, then, said Bailey. A hopeful sign.
It was perhaps another hopeful sign that an Auroran now appeared in the ornate doorway. He was tall, at least 8 centimeters taller than Daniil, who was some 5 centimeters taller than Bailey. The man in the doorway was broad as well, somewhat heavy-set, with a round face, a somewhat bulbous nose, curly dark hair, a swarthy complexion, and a smile. It was the smile that was most noticeable, wide and apparently unforced. It revealed prominent teeth that were white and well-shaped. He said, Ah, it is Mr. Bailey, the famous investigator from Earth, who has come to our little planet to show that I am a dreadful villain. Come in, come in. You are welcome. I am sorry if my able aide, roboticist Maloon Cecis, gave you the impression that I would be unavailable, but he is a cautious fellow and is a great deal more concerned about my time than I myself am. He stepped to one side as Bailey walked in and tapped him lightly with the flat of his hand on the shoulder blade as he passed. It seemed to be a gesture of friendship of a kind that Bailey had not yet experienced on Aurora. Bailey said cautiously. Was he assuming too much?
I take it you are Master Roboticist Keldon Amadiro?
Exactly, exactly. The man who intends to destroy Dr. Han Fastolf as a political force upon this planet. But that, as I hope to persuade you, does not really make me a villain. After all, I am not trying to prove that it is Fastolf who is a villain simply because of the foolish vandalism he committed on the structure of his own creation. Poor Jander. Let us say only that I will demonstrate that Fastolf is mistaken.
He gestured lightly, and the robot who had guided them in stepped forward and into a niche. As the door closed, Amadiro gestured Bailey jovially to a well-upholstered armchair, and with admirable economy indicated with his other arm wall niches for Daniil and Giscard as well.
Bailey noticed that Amadeiro stared with a moment's hunger at Daniil, and that for the moment his smile disappeared and a look that was almost predatory appeared on his face. It was gone quickly, and he was smiling again. Bailey was left to wonder if perhaps that momentary change of expression was an invention of his own imagination. Amadeiro said,
"Since it looks as though we're in for some mildly nasty weather, let's do without the ineffective daylight we are now dubiously blessed with."
Somehow, Bailey did not follow exactly what it was that Amadeiro did on the control panel of his desk. The windows opacified, and the walls glowed with gentle daylight. Amadeiro's smile seemed to broaden.
"We do not really have much to talk about, you and I, Mr. Bailey. I took the precaution of speaking to Mr. Grimaianus while you were coming here. From what he said, I decided to call Dr. Vasilia as well. Apparently, Mr. Bailey, you have more or less accused both of complicity in the destruction of Jander, and if I can understand the language, you have also accused me."
"I merely asked questions, Dr. Amadeiro, as I intend to do now."
"No doubt, but you are an Earthman, so you are not aware of the enormity of your actions, and I am really sorry that you must nonetheless suffer the consequences of them. You know, perhaps, that Grimaian has sent me a memo concerning your slander of him."
"He told me he had, but he misinterpreted my action. It was not slander."
Amadeiro pursed his lips as though considering the statement.
"I dare say you are right from your standpoint, Mr. Bailey, but you don't understand the Auroran definition of the word. I was forced to send Grimaianus's memo on to the chairman, and as a result it is very likely that you'll be ordered off the planet by tomorrow morning. I regret this, of course, but I fear that your investigation is about to come to an end."
Chapter 14. Again, Amadeiro. 55. Bailey was taken aback. He did not know what to make of Amadeiro, and he had not expected this confusion within himself. Grimaianus had described him as standoffish. From what Cecis had said, he expected Amadeiro to be autocratic. In person, however, Amadeiro seemed jovial, outgoing, even friendly. Yet if his words were to be trusted, Amadeiro was calmly moving to end the investigation. He was doing it pitilessly, and yet with what seemed to be a commiserating smile. What was he? Automatically, Bailey glanced toward the niches where Giscard and Daniil were standing. The primitive Giscard, of course, without expression. He advanced Daniil, calm and quiet. That Daniil had ever met Amadeiro in his short existence was, on the face of it, unlikely. Giscard, on the other hand, in his how many decades of life, might very well have met him. Bailey's lips tightened as he thought he might have asked Giscard in advance what Amadeiro might be like. He might, in that case, be now better able to judge how much of this roboticist's present persona was real and how much was cleverly calculated. Why on earth, or off it, Bailey wondered, didn't he use these robotic resources of his more intelligently? Or why didn't Giscard volunteer information? But no, that was unfair. Giscard clearly lacked the capacity for independent activity of that sort. He would yield information on request, Bailey thought, but would produce none on his own initiative. Amadeiro followed the brief flicking of Bailey's eyes and said,
"I'm one against three, I think. As you see, I have none of my robots here in my office, although any number are on instant call, I admit, while you have two of Fastolf's robots, the old reliable Giscard, and that marvel of design, Daniil."